States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello, I'm Chris Stafford. On the show this week, the USDF Adult Programs Education Committee Chair, Holly Hilliard, tells us about the adult amateur opportunities at the USDF. But before we hear from Holly, Sarah Geeky from Lebanon, Connecticut, presents our tip of the week on freestyle choreography and music. Sarah is a USDF certified instructor through fourth level and an instructor certification examiner. She's currently a member of the USDF Instructor Trainer Committee and the Freestyle Committee, and has served on the USDF Judges Committee. Sarah is also a USEF S judge and an FEI 4-star judge. Sarah, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Chris.
We want to focus on freestyle today, and you're going to talk about choreography and music.
Yes, and I wanted to really specifically address those areas because I've seen through my experience judging around the country that those are areas that people can really use to bolster their freestyle ideas and their success competing in freestyle.
Okay, so where should they begin?
Well, I would like to begin first by really stating that from the judge's point of view, we appreciate how difficult it is to put together a good freestyle. It really is. And a good freestyle is something that is compelling for both the judge to watch and for spectators to watch. That a good freestyle is such that the rider and the horse draw the audience in by the combination of the music, the beauty of the horse and rider, and their qualities that they have in the choreography. So we all strive to have that sort of freestyle. So to begin with, I would just like to remind everybody that as I talk about music and choreography, that they really need to also understand that our basic prerequisite is that in terms of our technical aspects of riding, whether it's training level requirements or fourth level or even FEI level requirements, that the rider and the person that's developing their freestyle, you must have the idea in your head that your standard of performance should be comparable to at least a 7. All right. So if you're doing a first level freestyle and you have circles and mic yields and lengthenings, they need to be quality. And that quality enhances in leaps and bounds the success of everything, the music, the choreography, the whole finished product. So that's our underlying most important theme. No matter how clever the music is or how clever the choreography is, it can't override weaknesses in the technical aspects. So that said, music and choreography are really, that's the fun part of the freestyle. That's where the creativity of the rider can come in. So I wanted to touch first on music. And we've seen good music, we've seen bad music, we've seen everything in between. And music is something that through technology and computers, we have available so many ways that we can really find music that fits our horse and fits our design for our freestyle. What you're looking for in your music is music that is matched in beat and tempo to the gaits of your horse, the walk, trot, and the canter. And each gait requires a different music because the gaits are different. The walk 4-beat, trot 2-beat, canter 3-beat, that we all know. So the music must fit the gaits. So the first thing the rider does is he figures out beats per minute, and then he goes and he starts to research music. So that seems like a small detail, but it's amazing how when you have music that really fits the horse's gaits, the gaits become better. And conversely, when you have music that does not match the horse's gaits, the gaits deteriorate. They don't look as good. All right, so that's a very important thing. Second, you know, in your music, you want to stick to one genre and not jump around. It should have the continuity of either, say, for instance, you want to do pop music, movie-themed music, or classical, whatever it is, stick with that all the way through. You don't want to jump around. It shouldn't be like changing the dial on the radio every few seconds. I know there's still a lot of controversy about vocals, and tiny bits of vocals are okay. A whole freestyle in vocals is not really desirable simply because it takes away from the horse. And the whole idea of music is that it wants to draw our eyes onto the horse and the rider in their performance. So other things in music is that once you've chosen the correct music, then you should also start to think about, as you're designing your choreography, that you want to utilize the natural phrasing that is found in music and be able to interpret that. For example, when there's a pause in the music, that's a great time to do a transition. Or when the music builds and gets very dramatic, that's often a great time to do an extension. To be able to develop the choreography around the music is a very strong plus and can help in also later on in your degree of difficulty. For instance, if a rider plans to do a transition, say, from trot to canter or canter walk or a flying change right as the music changes and he nails it, it's a plus. All right, that's a plus not only for music, but we also think about that in choreography, and it could also affect degree of difficulty. Phrasing and riding and using the phrasing as another way to really make your ride more beautiful, all right, and interesting to watch. All right, so that's just some ideas on music. Judges do not, I want to say this because I know a lot of people probably are thinking this, but judges do not make their marks when we judge a freestyle depending upon whether we like the music or not. That has nothing to do with it. Sure, we all have preferences, but we're looking to see that the music works for that horse and rider. So that, say, for instance, I've talked about genre, the type of music has to go with that particular horse and rider. Say you have a big 17-2 hand, large bone warm blood that is massive looking and impressive looking. That kind of horse can pull off very dramatic music, perhaps. Or say a smaller, lighter boned, thoroughbred type horse couldn't pull off that music. He perhaps would need a little bit of a lighter, more sensitive area kind of music. So things to consider. So let's go on and talk about choreography. Choreography is, of course, the real nuts and bolts of a freestyle combined with the technical correctness. Choreography, and this is what makes freestyle so much fun, is because we have very few limits. The limits are that we can't exceed the level of the test that the freestyle is, so that there are allowable movements and there are forbidden movements. Say, for example, at first level, we can only perform first level movements. We cannot show any second level movements, and so on. So when you're figuring your choreography, the first rule of thumb is it shouldn't look like a test. All right. So that means you have to start to think outside the box and not use test-like lines, but be creative. All right. There's so many different lines, curved lines and quarter lines and short diagonal lines and center lines and things you can do on those particular lines that will create a nice pattern for you. And even at training in first level, I have to tell you, I've seen some beautiful freestyles at that level where the riders were very clever to use completely untest-like lines. They had great music that enhanced the horse's gaits, and it all worked to bring about a very positive, very, very fun experience watching these horses and judging them. Also in choreography, you want to make sure that you can not overface your horse. In other words, sometimes we see riders that they have all these great ideas of doing this movement and that movement and another one, and putting that together in that combination just proves to be too difficult and beyond that particular horse's abilities at that time. So you have to know your horse, all right, and understand what he's good at and what's difficult for him. Because one of our strategies is to enhance his positive features and to minimize, hide, mask, I should say, the areas that he's weaker in. Because all horses are strong at something and all horses are a little bit weaker at something. So in your choreography, you have to keep that in mind. Now, just in terms of your design in the choreography, you want to plan it so that you can have interesting and exciting movements in the beginning of the ride. You know, get the judge's attention, get the audience's attention, make a statement so that you do something interesting and maybe your more difficult moves right off the bat. All right. And then in the middle of the ride, you can perhaps do something that's a bit more, less dramatic, a little bit easier for your horse. And then at the end of the ride, you want to finish with a bang, so to speak. Do something or several movements that your horse is good at. That's just general strategy. Also in choreography, do not feel compelled that you need to trot first, canter first, and walk first. And only do the gates, in... one time. You want to avoid excessive changing of gates, yes, but you do want to mix it up. Make it interesting for the audience. Okay, so in choreography, a couple other points to keep in mind. As you're using your non-test-like lines, you also want to use the whole arena. Right, and you want to have a balance between the work you do on both curved lines and straight lines. You want to have a balance between all of the gates. You want to have a balance between using one end of the arena versus another end. In other words, there should be symmetry in all of those areas for the freestyle. And this can be done in a very nice way so that from the judge's standpoint, we can expect a little bit what's coming up. For example, say the rider at second level comes in and does a really nice pattern of shoulder in, round airs, and then a medium trot. At some point, we're going to expect that same pattern on the other direction. All right, so you don't want to let us down. And that kind of symmetry works in the rider and the horse's benefit to give a positive performance. Let's see. You also want to have a balance between collected work and extended work and a balance between the gates. Be careful that if your horse is good at something, say at third level, say your horse is really good at flying changes, avoid doing 50 flying changes, all right? Yes, show them off, but don't overdo it. Overkill doesn't work in your favor. Really, the best impression you can make for the audience and for the judge is that you and your horse look like you're having fun, that you look like you're dancing. We do not see you struggle at all, but it's just a very light, harmonious picture that you make. And that is what we're looking for. So I think that about sums up improving your freestyle.
Well, I'm sure this will be very well received. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the program.
Thank you very much for having me, Chris. It was my pleasure.
Holly Hilliard is the chair of the Adults Program Committee, and she's joining me today to explain about the opportunities that are available to adult amateurs, of which there are quite a few, aren't there, Holly? Welcome to the program.
There are quite a few, and thank you, Chris. USDF does offer quite a few programs already, and they're constantly looking at ways to increase the offerings. But for programs that are available to adult amateurs, there's really very few that amateurs are excluded from. In fact, I don't think there's any that they're excluded from. It may be a level of riding or a level of expertise that they may not quite have reached for some of the programs. But for instance, the adult clinics, they are offered in every region, one per region every 2 years. The term adult clinic simply means that the demo riders must be adults in the USDF definition of adult. The young rider clinics, they're welcome to, anyone is welcome to attend as an auditor. It's just that in the young rider clinics, they must be a youth to be a demo rider. So you have both of those programs that are available to amateurs and professionals alike. They are, as I said, offered in every region, one every 2 years. And I think that sometimes we sell ourselves short and think that a program, whether you're an amateur or a professional or whether you compete or don't compete, sometimes I think we tend to look at programs and say, well, this is competition-oriented and therefore it doesn't apply to me because I don't compete. Or those are professionals that are riding, therefore it doesn't apply to me because I'm an amateur. Instead of looking at opportunities and saying, I can learn from every example out there, whether it's at the level I'm riding, below the level I'm riding, or above the level of that I'm riding, there's still something for me to learn from it. And whether I'm watching professionals or amateurs, there's still something for me to learn. Whether I'm riding or watching, I can still learn. And I think that we tend to sell ourselves short and limit our experiences by just assuming that it doesn't apply to us.
Well,
and I don't think that's the case most of the time.
Yes, that's very true, because there is, as you say, always something to learn, and you don't necessarily have to be mounted. You can just be an observer and learn so much from just joining in clinics, every educational opportunities, of which there are so many within the USDF. There is something for everyone, isn't there?
I do believe that. I do believe that there's something for everyone, and that regardless of what it is, I know every time I watch even 5 minutes of something, or read an article, or watch a short video or a long video, I learn every time. And I think that everyone should just think of them more as a learning experience than having it, whether or not it really applies to them. For instance, whether or not they compete, if you compete and you go out and you say, I'm not going to compete because my horse isn't big and fancy and I'm not going to get a ribbon, well, if you go and say, I'm going to compete because I get the judge's opinion, therefore I know if my training is on track or not, that's a learning experience. And I think if you choose not to compete, that's fine, but you can volunteer at a show and watch and learn by watching or learn by volunteering. The team competitions, they don't have to be at a USDF or USEF accredited shows. They can just be fun. You join with friends of yours and you do a team and go to a show, a schooling show or whatever, and enter as a team competition, and it's a learning experience. The L program that USDF offers, which is the judge training program as well as the instructor trainer program, both of those programs, yes, they're geared to judges' education and or instructor education, but those programs all need demo riders, and demo riders that's a learning experience for them, and amateurs as well as professionals can be demo riders, as well as both of those programs have auditing available to them. So if you are just going for the education, just for the sake of the education, you can audit those programs and learn a lot. I audited the L program, the first portions of the L program, just for the education, not because I have any aspirations of being a judge, but you can go and watch and listen and learn. And there's no restrictions on who can attend that first portion of the L program.
One of those opportunities you've just mentioned, Holly, was being a demo rider. And some might think, oh, gosh, that's quite intimidating to be put on the spot, so to speak. But it's a great learning experience right there, isn't it? And is that open to anyone if you apply in time? How does that work?
For instance, for the adult clinics, again, that's another demo rider possibility. Anyone can apply. You send in a video. I'm not positive how they select them for the L program. I think maybe by region it's a little different when you apply to be a demo rider for the instructor trainer clinics. But for the adult clinics, anyone can apply at any level. We try in that program to have a demo rider from each level. And so you send in a video. It needs to be a representation of the level at which the horse is training or at the level at which you are applying. And there's a committee that is different by region, but there's a committee that reviews all of the videotapes, and they make a selection of 8 to 10 riders for that region. And they try to have geographic representation. They try to have different breeds of horses. They definitely try to have different levels of riders. So anyone can apply, and it can be intimidating. But when you want to learn something, sometimes you have to stretch, and I think that's part of it. You put yourself into a position where you stretch a little bit so you can learn. The adult clinics are, again, you just have to be an adult to apply as a demo rider. Again, they're in every region, one series. The series runs for 2 years, and we hit every region in that two-year period, and then we change clinicians. Right now, we're finishing up a series with Hilda Gurney. So the instructor travels from one region to the other. They're a two-day clinic, typically. The demo riders, I believe there's 8 in this series. They get a lesson the first day and the second day, and the auditors, those particular clinics are geared toward auditors. So while the riders are getting a lesson, the idea is that the auditors are watching and get a chance to ask questions, and what is happening in that particular lesson is explained to the auditors. So the clinician is addressing the auditors much more so than in a regular clinic.
And of course, you're also continuing to support HART and eTrack as well, and those adult learning initiatives too, through the work that you do.
Absolutely. And eTrack is for people that, particularly if you live in an area where geographically it's challenging to get to clinics or to take lessons, or there's just maybe a limited number of dressage riders in your area. eTrack, there are a multitude of modules that you can watch training videos and address specific points so that you can watch that and, again, go out, try to apply it to your own riding, come back in, watch it as many times as you want, or watch it in portions and that can concentrate on a specific portion of it and go back and watch it over and over and over again. When you are restricted or limited in what your abilities are for travel, it's very, very challenging, but there are opportunities. There's tremendous articles out there, and there's articles on eTrack, as well as there's lots of books available through the bookstore. You've got USDF Connection, which always has fabulous training articles in it. The eTrack program should be very beneficial to people that have difficulty traveling too, whether it's because you have family limitations or financial limitations or geographic limitations. Most everybody now has access to the internet and can access those programs and benefit from them.
Wonderful. Well, just to remind everybody, Holly, that the mission actually of the committee of which you're chair, the Adult Programs Committee, is to encourage, to increase and enrich adult participation in dressage by providing educational opportunities and recognition of achievement too. I mean, there are two main goals there, aren't there? And it is recognition of achievement that's just as important for the adult amateur.
It is, and USDF has amateur awards specifically for amateurs at every level, as well as they can strive to or make their own personal goal of getting their, you know, their bronze, silver, and gold medals, just depending on what their aspirations are and what the level that they're riding. And then there's also USEF now has rider tests that you can go, and you don't have to have that big fancy horse that everybody laments wishing they could have, but the USEF rider tests now help you on just to evaluate your own riding skills and abilities. Then you also have HART, the Horse and Rider Together program, that is a way for you to blog or correspond with other people if you choose, or just to keep your own journal online. Then you can throw stuff out there to discuss with your friends or fellow riders, and that also can be a source of information for you. There's wonderful educational sessions at USDF Convention. The USDF University helps you keep track of what your accomplishments have been. There's also programs that are accredited by the USDF University that are offered at the local level. So GMOs can offer a clinic that is accredited by USDF University, so they can be pretty certain that there's a certain quality to that program. There's requirements in order for those programs to become accredited, so it would be beneficial for them to participate and for people to take advantage of the programs that are out there, because it's expensive to put them on, and if people don't participate, if people don't attend, they dwindle and people stop offering the clinics and the different educational opportunities. It takes participation to keep them going.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much indeed for sharing this information with us, Holly. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And you can find out more about the work of this committee and the committee members by going to the website usdf.org. And while you're there, don't forget to visit eTrack, the USDF's online learning center and resource for dressage and equine education. This podcast is available for download on iTunes. The USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.